Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Today we'll be looking at Pope Francis's pastoral visit to Mexico and reporting on Friday's historic meeting in Cuba between the Holy Father and Patriarch Kirill, the head of the Russian Orthodox Church. Pope Francis is spending 6 days in Mexico, and his trip includes visits to some of the poorest and most violent areas of the nation, as well as those most affected by migration. On Saturday, Pope Francis began the first full day of his visit to Mexico by urging its leaders and the authorities to work for the common good. He warned against seeking the path of privileges or benefits for a few to the detriment of the good of all, saying experience teaches us that sooner or later the life of society becomes a fertile soil for corruption, the drug trade, exclusion of different cultures, violence and also human trafficking, kidnapping and death, bringing suffering and slowing down development. His remarks came in an address to diplomats and political and civil leaders at Mexico's National Palace. This was preceded by a private meeting between the Pope and the nation's president, Enrique Peña Nieto. Pope Francis arrived in Mexico City on Friday night to a rapturous welcome. Our correspondent covering the papal visit to Mexico is Veronica Scarsbrook, and she sent this report.
The Pope's arrival in Mexico City was supposed to be a straightforward affair, without particular protocol. In reality, it had more the feeling of a fiesta, verging on a television show. There was a stadium crowd, mariachi, folk dancers in colourful traditional dresses, and singers of all ages, including children. But then, as we know, Mexicans love fiestas. And perhaps Pope Francis does too. He certainly looked relaxed and happy, as he always does when he's back among his people. On a more official note, the President of Mexico, Enrique Peña Nieto, was there to greet him together with his wife, the Primera Dama. And there were children who ran altogether into his arms to hug him, while the crowds yelled, "Quedan que el Papa nos benedica," requesting he bless them. Eventually he did bless them and then waved in a friendly manner. And on a more profane note, he donned a black and gold Mexican mariachi hat for a moment, and then he climbed into his Popemobile and covered the 19 kilometres into town amid a tunnel of cheering crowds, lighting up the night with their smartphones or torches. Definitely a homecoming. With Pope Francis in Mexico City, I'm Veronica Scarsbrick.
Pope Francis's final scheduled engagement on Saturday was the celebration of Mass in the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Named the patroness of all Americas, millions of people flock to her shrine every year, and the Virgin of Guadalupe is widely revered by the vast majority of Mexicans. Veronica Scarsbrook visited the shrine herself just before the Pope's arrival to meet some of the Mexican faithful, and she tells us more about that deep-rooted devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Like many of the pilgrims I met at the shrine of the Basilica of Santa Maria de Guadalupe here in Mexico City, Pablo and Maria were clutching in their arms a rather large and very colourful statue of Our Lady. Surrounded by their children and grandchildren, their weather-beaten faces bore the marks of simple people. The expression in their eyes was one of long-time suffering. They told me they'd come here all the way from Puebla to ask for protection from Our Lady. It made me think of Pope Francis's words when he recently explained in an interview how he too seeks from Our Lady of Guadalupe security and tenderness. How when he comes to this all-embracing circular basilica where the miraculous image is housed, he will draw from their faith, from the popular piety of people like Pablo and Maria. He believes it has the potential for faith to be embodied in a culture and passed on to future generations. Rather like what happened in Mexico during the years the expression of religion was banned, when the faith lived on despite the sometimes pitiless persecution. You may remember how Pope Pius XI wrote 3 encyclicals denouncing the persecution of the church there between 1926 and 1937. You may remember too the more popular description of the whiskey priest in Graham Greene's novel The Power and the Glory, an anti-clericalism enshrined in the Mexican Constitution of 1917, which gave rise to a dark, complex chapter in the history of the Catholic Church in this nation. Known as the Cristero War, it lasted from 1926 to 1929. The battle cry of this group, which stemmed from the local Catholic action, was Viva Cristo Rey. It left thousands dead. Mexican-born Dominican Father Alejandro Crosswaite grew up long after that horrific war. It was roughly mid-20th century, but while violent oppression of the Catholic Church had fizzled out, draconian legal measures hadn't. Catholic education was passed down in secret. He recounts how the nuns in his school even had to hide a statue of Our Lady of Guadalupe in a closet for fear of being discovered. How every morning the closet would be opened, prayers would be said, and then Our Lady would be placed safely back in the closet for the next day. A situation which only changed in 1995. By that time, Pope John Paul II had concluded 3 out of 5 visits to Mexico. But the real breakthrough came in 1979, when he appeared in Mexico for the first time in his white cassock, forbidden at the time in public, for religious garb was then allowed exclusively in church. But the mould had been broken, and the outcome was, believe it or not, that the Pope received a fine which the President of the time paid for him rather tellingly in public. And now, all these years later, Pope Francis will reap the legacy of St. John Paul II and of Benedict XVI, now Pope Emeritus, who came here in 2012. Just think, front pews have been reserved for the President during Holy Mass at the Basilica of Guadalupe, unthinkable back in 1979. But above all, Pope Francis will reap the legacy of those who kept the faith in this overwhelmingly Catholic country, people like Pablo and Maria with their weather-beaten faces. In Mexico City, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.
Pope Francis arrived in Mexico after a brief stopover in the Cuban capital, Havana, where he held an historic meeting with the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, Patriarch Kirill. Their two-hour encounter on Friday marked the first meeting between a Roman pontiff and the head of the Russian Orthodox Church since the Great Schism in 1054 between the Western and Eastern churches. The two leaders ended their historic encounter at Havana Airport with an urgent appeal for an end to conflict and the persecution of Christians across the Middle East. That appeal came in a joint declaration, which the two leaders signed at their meeting, signalling the start of a new era of relations between Catholics and the Russian Orthodox Church. Philippa Hitchin picks up the story.
The 30-paragraph-long declaration put down in words the heartfelt desire of both the Pope and the Patriarch to put an end to centuries of conflict and disputes between Moscow and Rome. Speaking after the closed-door encounter with just their translators and closest advisers present, Pope Francis said the two leaders had talked together as bishops and as brothers who share the same baptism. Unity, the Pope stressed, is achieved by walking together, adding that he and the Patriarch had discussed a number of initiatives that they feel it is possible to achieve, despite the continuing obstacles that have divided the East and Western churches since their schism of 1054. In their joint declaration, the two men say they hope their first encounter in Cuba, crossroads between East and West, between North and South, can contribute in a concrete way to the re-establishment of unity between Christians. The document speaks at length about the plight of Christians and other people of faith who are persecuted in countries across the Middle East, witnessing the destruction of their churches and the extermination of families, villages and entire cities. In particular, the statement speaks of the conflicts in Syria and Iraq, urging the international community to work together to put an end to violence and terrorism and to prevent the expulsion of Christians from the region. The Pope and the Patriarch stress the vital importance of interfaith dialogue, and they appeal to all those involved in the fight against terrorism to act in a responsible and prudent manner. Also high on the list of shared Catholic and Orthodox concerns is the question of religious freedom, not just in former communist countries where atheism dominated for decades, but also throughout Europe and beyond, where secularism, the statement warns, poses a serious threat to religious liberty. The joint document focuses on the plight of the poor and migrants who are knocking on the doors of rich countries, where unbridled consumerism is threatening the natural resources of our planet. The Pope and the Patriarch also reiterate their belief in the family and marriage as an act of love freely chosen between a man and a woman as the foundation of society. They stress the inalienable right to life of children in the womb, as well as the elderly and the sick, and they call on young Christians to be unafraid to live out these gospel values in their lives. Finally, the two leaders speak about the conflict in Ukraine, which has left so many dead and injured, provoking a serious humanitarian and economic crisis. They say they hope their encounter can contribute to ending the tensions between Greek Catholics and Orthodox Christians, and they invite members of all churches there to work together to restore peace to the war-torn country. I'm Philippa Hitchin.
On board the papal plane, following the meeting with Patriarch Kirill, Pope Francis told journalists that it was a conversation between brothers. He added that he really felt during the meeting an inner joy that came from the Lord. Pope Francis also said that possible activities in common had been talked about, saying that unity is a walk together. Commenting on the joint declaration signed after the encounter, the Pope stressed that it was a pastoral and not a sociological declaration. The director of the Holy See's press office, Father Federico Lombardi, spoke with Veronica Scarsbrick about his impressions of the Pope's meeting with Patriarch Kirill and about the papal visit to Mexico.
Really, he was so happy, and the Patriarch was also so happy to be together and to talk together. And there will be surely many consequences of this meeting. The Pope has said that they have spoken also about some concrete initiative. He has not explained what, but the talk was not totally theoretic, was also something concrete, and the Pope is someone that speaks always to be on the way. And I think that with this encounter, we have the ecumenism on the way also with the Russian Orthodox Church. And it is not because of the common declaration, but because of the personal encounter.
Can you tell me a little bit about the arrival in Mexico? It was quite unusual, wasn't it?
Yes, here in Mexico City we have this incredible crowd, this million of persons, and there was a very good preparation also of the arrival ceremony, with many people, with the songs, with the dance and so on. And the Pope has immediately broken the protocol, going directly to meet the people. In this sense, I think we have experienced already how the great Mexican people is happy to have the Pope with him, and how the Pope desires to meet personally and directly many, many persons every day.
That was the director of the Holy See's press office, Father Federico Lombardi, speaking to Veronica Scarsbrick. Dominican Father Jacint d'Esteville, who is in charge of relations with the Slavic Orthodox churches at the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity, was among those in Havana for that historic meeting. He told Philippa Hitchin beforehand that despite recent tensions between Moscow and Rome, the Russian Orthodox Church has a rich history of seeking reconciliation among the divided Christian churches.
There are 14 Orthodox autocephalous churches. All of them are not patriarchates, but the Moscow Patriarchate is the fifth in the diptych, in the taxis, in the order of authority of all Orthodox churches. So it's not the first Orthodox church in the diptych, is the Ecumenical Patriarchate, and the Holy See has special relationship with Ecumenical Patriarchate, special relationship because it is the primus inter pares, a primacy of honor inside of the Orthodox Church. So it's difficult to compare because we have a special relationship with the Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople, the Church of Peter and the Church of Andrew. But nevertheless, the Moscow Patriarchate is an important church because, as you know, almost two-thirds of the Orthodox are members of the Moscow Patriarchate. The Moscow Patriarchate is not only the church in Russia, but it is, one can say, a communion of local churches in different countries, and according to the Moscow Patriarchate, there are 14 countries inside of the canonical territory of the Moscow Patriarchate. Most of them are former countries of the Soviet Union, in fact, and before of the Russian Empire. And these countries are considered by Moscow Patriarchate as its canonical territory. So obviously it is an important church. Also, in the history of the Russian Church, there was this idea that the Russian Church is a bit between East and West. The idea is that the Russian Church has an ecumenical vocation, one can say. As Russia is a bit between East and West, it was the idea of Solovyov, the great philosopher, Russian philosopher. He was convinced of the ecumenical vocation of Russian Orthodoxy between East and West.
Almost as a bridge between East and
West. A bridge. And in this tradition, there was a very fruitful dialogue at the end of the 19th century between the Russian Orthodox Church and the Old Catholic Church. After the First Council of Vatican, as you know, there were a part of Catholics decided to not recognize this council and founded the Old Catholic. And there was a very interesting dialogue between the Russian Orthodox theologians and Old Catholic theologians about, for example, the filioque or other issues, theological issues. And at that time, the Russian Orthodox Church was very interested by the dialogue with Western Christianity. Another example is the Moscow Council of 1917. It is the first Orthodox Council deciding to create a commission for inter-Christian dialogue, inter-church dialogue. It was very...
way ahead of its time.
Yes. And it was the first time in the history. After, of course, in the 90s, the Ecumenical Patriarchate was a pioneer in promoting ecumenical relationship, but it was very interesting to found a commission in 1917. Another example is the sending of observers in the Second Council of Vatican. The Russian Orthodox Church was the first Orthodox Church sending Orthodox observers. It was the policy of the Metropolitan Nicodem, who was the spiritual father of Patriarch Kirill. Patriarch Kirill considered himself as the spiritual son of Metropolitan Nicodem. Metropolitan Nicodem promoted the relationship with the Catholic Church, and with his influence, the Russian Orthodox Church decided in 69 until 86 to permit the intercommunion between Orthodox and Catholic in some special cases, and in the Gulags, for example, when it was not possible for Catholics to receive communion from Catholic priests, they could go to ask to an Orthodox priest, for example. It was a very important decision, and it is an unique decision in all the history of Orthodoxy and of the relationship between Orthodoxy and Catholic Church. So there is a tradition, and Patriarch Kirill considered himself as a son of Metropolitan Nicodem, so one can hope that he will follow the ecumenical approach of his mentor.
Despite this pioneering spirit of Patriarch Kirill that you're talking about, there are many leaders in the Orthodox Church who are still very opposed to stronger ties with the Catholic world, aren't there? Do you expect there'll be some kind of backlash against this meeting?
Well, it is a fear of the Russian Orthodox Church that it could be some reaction, negative reaction, from some conservative milieu in the Russian Orthodox Church. As it was after the visit of Patriarch Alexei in Paris, for example, it was the first time that a patriarch prayed officially in a Catholic church. He wanted to venerate the relics of the crown of thorns in Notre Dame, a cathedral in Paris. And after his visit, there was some very negative reaction. Some, it was a minority, but nevertheless, it is a difficulty. But now I think that time have changed, and obviously not all will agree with this step, but the large majority of the church will follow the decision of the Patriarch and of the Holy Synod on this matter.
What impact do you think this encounter with the Pope could have on the Pan-Orthodox Council that will take place later this year in Crete?
It is two different agenda, but nevertheless, I think it could facilitate the Pan-Orthodox Council, because one important issue of this council is the relationship with the other Christians. There is a very interesting statement of this council about the relationship of the Orthodox Church and the other Christians, and the fact that the Patriarch of Moscow meet the Pope is obviously a sign of the desire of the Russian Orthodox Church to be involved also in this path of unity. And I think it will facilitate, in fact, this Pan-Orthodox Council.
What are the possibilities, the question everybody will be asking, of a papal visit to Moscow at this point?
I think a visit of a pope in Russia or a visit of a patriarch in the Vatican is, it's too early to, for the moment, to speak about such visit. But I think this meeting make possible now to have such projects.
That was Dominican Father Hyacinthe d'Esteville of the Pontifical Council for Christian Unity, speaking to Philippa Hitchin. The Apostolic Nuncio to Mexico is Archbishop Christoph Pierre, and in an interview with Veronica Scarsbrook just ahead of the Pope's arrival there, he spoke to her about the role of the Catholic Church in Mexico's history, culture and society, and about some of the challenges facing the nation.
I always say that this is the house of the Pope. I'm just living in the house of the Pope.
Because other popes have been here, right?
Well, precisely... John Paul II lived in this house, precisely in the house where we are now, and in the other part of this house, four times. And you know, this the nunciature is very well known in Mexico, precisely because the people used to come at the door of the nunciature to sing for the Pope, to listen to the Pope. The Pope has been a person very well known, very well loved by the Mexican. I hope that the Pope Francis will be also well received by the Mexicans.
People expect Pope Francis to come here to solve problems, whereas in reality he has said he has come to draw from the faith of the Mexicans. What is so special about the faith of Mexicans, do you think?
Well, you know, I think it's correct. Many people think that the Pope will come to as a kind of solution to their problems. And obviously, the Pope doesn't come for that. You know, I think it's just a question of respect for the people. The people are responsible, and they should do whatever is possible to resolve their problems. What you say, it's also correct. You know, the Pope knows that faith has a long history and in the life of the Mexican people, and has inspired the way of life. The church is part of the nation, and this comes from the very beginning. This from the event, extraordinary event of the encounter of Mary of Guadalupe, with the Indian Juan Diego's. Juan Diego, when Milagros, as a kind of miracle, appeared the image of Our Lady. And this image has been read by the people, obviously the first people, the Indios, read it as a kind of revelation which helped them to discover the revelation of Christ through Mary, but also to understand their own situation. The people were living in very difficult situation at the moment of at the beginning of Mexico, but they reconciled with themselves and with their own religiosity, to the point that the image of Guadalupe, but also what the presence of Mary has accompanied the life of the people until now.
This is a country which has a very difficult history right now in terms of the drug problem, violence, kidnapping. One could make a very long list there. How do you explain the fact that there is still this religiosity? Isn't it in contradiction with all this?
Certainly there are contradictions in life, but I think we find contradictions in the life of all peoples. You know? But certainly we should not generalize the problems. You know, the problems are there, violence, poverty, all the manifestations of violence and poverty, you know, the deficit of education and so forth. But my own experience all over these years as nuncio in Mexico has shown me also the profound riches of the Mexican people, the sense of the family, the sense of community. You know, I think we have a lot of values which remain, and these values are certainly connected with the faith of the people and the long history of religiosity of these people.
So religiosity affects the culture of this nation, yes, yes. Yet for many, many years, Catholic Church was banned here. There was strong persecution.
I would say the Church has always been present in the soul and the culture of the people. Officially, there was a kind of separation between church and state. We have had times of persecution, at times very strong persecution, other times a kind of less strong persecution, but the church has always been, I would say, even during the time of persecution, at the center of the life of the people. And this is what is important. We should not make a confusion between the state and the society. And the society as well has always been inspired by the faith and by the very existence of the Church, penetrating in all areas of the society and the life of the people.
And the Church is very much alive at a grassroots level here in Mexico.
I would say so, yes, yes. I would say so. The problem which is arising for the moment, you know, of stronger secularization. You know, the culture of Mexico is changing very, very rapidly. And one of the characteristics of this culture, of this change, is that many manifestations of the culture are getting away from the faith of the people. And this is affecting particularly the young people. We should be worried about it, you know. And I think the Pope is sharing this preoccupation in the same way that the bishops, the priests, you know, all of us. This is also the reason why, since the meeting of bishops in Aparecida 8 years ago, the bishops invited everybody in Mexico, in the church, to initiate a process of a new mission to go to the people and to evangelize them where they are in their life, which is different from before.
The Aparecida document was penned by Pope Francis.
Well, Pope Francis, when he was the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, was appointed by the bishops as the coordinator of the working group for the redaction of the final document. So it was an important part of the redaction of this document, which has been, in my opinion, very important in the life of the Church, particularly in Mexico, over the last 8 years.
So he's coming in Lent, and he's coming during the Jubilee of Mercy.
Exactly. I think it's very interesting that he's coming at the beginning of Lent, practically. And certainly, the visit of the Pope will have as an orientation the announcement of the mercy of God. You know? And the Pope said it in his first intervention, I want to be the missionary of the mercy of God.
That was the Apostolic Nuncio to Mexico, Archbishop Christophe Pierre, speaking to Veronica Scaresbrick. Well, that's all we have time for today. We'll be on the air again at the same time tomorrow with further details of Pope Francis's pastoral visit to Mexico. And don't forget, you can also listen to our programmes on our website at rv.va. I'm Susie Hodges, and from all of us here at Vatican Radio, goodbye for now. Laudato Jesus Christus.